Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Get the house you want with the payment you want at buywithconrad.com. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this at buywithconrad.com. NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. The first step to buying a house is buywithconrad.com. Woo! Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Be the Man. And of course, you know the rest of that. It's the world famous saying from the one and only Nature Boy, Mr. Ric Flair. How are you, man?
Good, Conrad. Glad to be home, man.
This has been a long time coming, man. Back together again. Here we are, and I'm excited, man. The Ric Flair Show is back on the road here, and we've got a special topic today, and we've got just a lot of fun planned here on to Be the Man. Just to catch everybody up, this is the final iteration of the Ric Flair podcast. And man, this is back where it all started, way back in 2015. Can you believe it? Now we're back again.
Wow, we've come a long way, both of us.
No doubt. So excited to be here.
You're the podcast king. I've almost died twice. What the hell?
Well, that's not going to happen anytime soon because we've got some big plans this year. We don't want to spill all the beans today, but just to kind of recap, what we're going to be doing, boys and girls, is taking you down a stroll down memory lane every single week here, talking about the good old days of professional wrestling with the Nature Boy. We're going to do a couple of watch-alongs a month. We'll probably have a guest a month, and then we're going to do some Q&As every month. We want to make this the best possible podcast we can, and man, I'm excited. We got a new look. We got a new feel. This is going to be a fun time, Ric. Thanks for jumping on.
No, I'm very excited. Don't forget the fact that I'm the king of cannabis now.
Oh my gosh.
You ever think you'd see the day Ric Flair be smoking a joint?
No, I still don't believe that, by the way.
Watch. I'm going to smoke one with Mike next week.
I can't believe it. But I do want to talk about that because, boy, it was all over the news.
Yeah.
You got to see Mike Tyson deliver some live rounds on a flight last week, a JetBlue flight. And then that night, he's with you in some big nightclub living it up with Ric Ross. What in the world?
Yeah, well, he'd been an appearance. Every time the way this thing is working, and now that I'm his partner, whenever another store or a state, and they're coming in left and right, picks up the product line, he'll make a personal appearance. That's what I'll be doing starting in probably 2 weeks when my line drops, Ric Flair Drip.
So Ric Flair Drip is going to be your new cannabis line. It's with Mike Tyson's outfit. And from what I understand, he's really taken over, I think, first in Las Vegas, now expanding out there.
It's unbelievable. He's killing it. He's Man, killing it. And awesome. Chad and Adam and Aristotle, the guys that put all this together, are just great guys. And they're like you. They're young, aggressive, successful, and making a lot of money, just like yourself.
What I'm most excited about, though, Ric, is not just the wrestling component, because certainly this is going to serve the wrestling fan base who has learned to enjoy this as an alternative way to medicate, if you will. But boy, in the hip hop circles, a Mike Tyson product named Ric Flair Drip marijuana, that just feels like that's supposed to be right there.
Woo chews. Say that Mike Tyson, it's woo chews.
I love it. Woo chews. That's tremendous, man.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about
it. They will put you to sleep too. I tell you that.
Oh, you had one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's a
I haven't had mine, but I've had a mic bite.
I can't wait to learn more. Maybe we need to experiment with one of these at a live.
They will knock your ass out, man. You will sleep solidly.
Well, you know, when you guys do a commercial for your version, now we need to do like the flare flop.
Yeah, for sure.
That's hilarious.
I'll take one bite and walk 2 feet and go boom.
I love it. I love it. Well, we're going to be talking about you going boom way back in the day. I love watching old wrestling with you. I just want to explain how this all this idea really came together years ago. Gosh, back in 2014, maybe you were here at the house in Huntsville and you said, "Hey, do you have any of my old Steamboat matches?" And I said, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, which one do you want?" And you said you wanted to see the Chicago one. So we sat down and we watched that title switch from 1989 where Ricky the Dragon Steamboat beat you for the world title. And it was the first time you had sat down and watched it because
I never have watched any of them back until I met you. Isn't that funny?
I just think it's interesting that I got that experience in my home theater here. And now I want to bring that same thing to the audience. We're going to watch some of your old classic matches and you can sort of tell us what you were thinking at the time, what was going on, all of that. And we're going to do that today with perhaps one of your biggest opponents ever, Sting, from the very first Clash of the Champions. And there's so much context to this. I want to remind everybody, this happened March 27th, 1988 at the Greensboro Coliseum. Now, this is after Starrcade had left Greensboro for 1987, but coming back home and bringing a live show on TBS as a special like this, Greensboro was the natural choice, was it not, Rick?
Yes. At that time, yes.
I'm excited that we're going to get to watch it. But before we do, I just want to remind everybody that we're still in the middle of a wrestling war, not like AEW and WWE are these days. It was a lot hotter. What we're talking about specifically is Vince McMahon was the king of pay-per-view. And when the Crockett Promotions outfit decided they wanted to get into pay-per-view, well, Vince counter-programmed it. 1987, everyone remembers, Vince created Survivor Series really essentially just to undermine Starrcade.
Yes. And
told a lot of the different cable providers, "Hey, if you carry their show, I won't give you WrestleMania. Instead, carry my show." He sabotaged Starrcade, and as a result, Jim Crockett Promotions was never the same. Wouldn't you agree, Rick?
Pretty much. That was the start of the beginning of the end. Yeah.
And of course, the idea was at that time, and I'm just reading it, Rick, you lived it. The narrative in the business was guys were making tons of money in non-traditional ways. So not just selling tickets or quote unquote picture money, as Jeff Jarrett would say, but all of a sudden there were action figures, the LJN or the dolls, as the guy would call it, lunch boxes, cartoons, all of that. So the word on the whisper campaign amongst the boys, telephone, telegram, telewrestler, was, boy, the Iron Sheik just got 80 grand for this quarter for his doll or whatever.
It was amazing.
So,
and we didn't realize obviously that he had put this marketing team in place, Vince had, that, you know, the Crockett's, you know, not slighting them whatsoever. They just weren't prepared for it. I mean, I just think Vince had more access to people being up in the New York area that came to him with ideas, and they could have been his ideas. I don't know. I mean, he's a very smart guy, but it was brutal at watching these guys make these royalty checks working for the other guy. And, you know, we at one time, I mean, I'm sure had we had that opportunity and that tool in place, the Four Horsemen stuff and the Sting stuff and the Rock and Roll would have been brutal. I mean, it would have sold everywhere. Everywhere I go to this day, as you know.
Oh, they're throwing up the four for sure. Yeah.
One out of every five pictures that want to do this, no matter where I am.
And what's fascinating to me about this era specifically is it's not as if Crockett was the only company who wasn't monetizing that way. In fact, it was the opposite. Vince McMahon was the only. It's not as if Watts was doing it or Graham was doing it or it wasn't happening anywhere else in the country. Vince really was ahead of the times.
Oh, but way ahead of the times.
The real question I wanted to ask about, because we're going to be talking about the Clash match here, and this is sort of a receipt, if you will. Since Vince McMahon undermined the very big event, Starrcade, which was really the granddaddy of them all, most folks remember this. Starrcade was from 83. We didn't see WrestleMania until 85. Yeah. So this big closed circuit pay-per-view type wrestling event, this is really before pay-per-view, but you get the idea. Starrcade was there first, but once pay-per-view started to become more of a thing, WrestleMania became the brand. And I'm curious from your standpoint, Rick, when you saw that happen in 85 and you had all the pomp and circumstance of Madison Square Garden and the Rockettes and Muhammad Ali and just Madison Square Garden, did you think, it's okay, but not for me, or this is an experiment, but it'll be a fly by night. He'll lose money or it won't make, what did you think of the original WrestleMania concept?
I didn't have time to really look at it that close up, but I was happy for those guys. I knew Hulk pretty well. Of course, I knew Roddy Piper was, you know, one of my closest friends in the business. And I knew Orndorff real well. I knew Bobby Orton. So I was happy for those guys. I've never looked at it as being anything that was bad for the business. I was so proud of the fact that I was the NWA champion. And then, of course, the first WCW with that belt that you have. That I didn't regret any decisions I made, because I was invited to come up there in 86 the first time, I think. And I couldn't leave Crockett, and I couldn't leave, my friends, the Four Horsemen. And I wasn't stressed out about it at all. I was happy for them. But there's some untold stories that we'll talk about later on about how Vince was able to make the payoffs for that WrestleMania. So, that's just a story for another time. Crockett figured into that, trust me.
Oh, in a big way. We'll talk about that, and maybe we'll get into the business, because there's been lots of rumor and innuendo about the way he funded WrestleMania, but we'll talk about that as you get down the road. But at least for now.
That was a big payroll hit for him, man. I mean, when you're paying T and Hulk and Roddy and Orndorff and Orton, I'm sure that they didn't get the same money that Roddy and Hulk did, but Liberace, Muhammad Ali, was a lot going on that night.
It was a big gamble, and it certainly paid off. WrestleMania became the brand, but that really leads us to where we are with what we're going to be talking about today, because once they sabotage Starrcade in 1987, you guys have a return act. And the idea was Crockett had to go to a lot of these talent and say, hey guys, forget the dolls, forget the cartoons, forget the lunch boxes. And I know we'll never have a show as big as WrestleMania, because at this point, WrestleMania 3 is in the rearview mirror. And buddy, it was the watershed moment in the industry. Such a huge opportunity for licensing, not just that live gate, but just the impact it had on the business at large. But what Crockett does is he says, guys, here's what I'll do. I'll put you on a guarantee and we'll start paying you based on the houses. And if we don't make this total number at the end of the year, well, we'll make it up to you. But the way we'll be able to make it up to you is we won't have one big pay-per-view event a year. We'll have four. So that was actually Crockett's idea first, to have more pay-per-views than just the one WrestleMania. Of course, Vince created SummerSlam and he created Survivor Series, and eventually he more than caught up. But Survivor Series was really created largely just to mess with you guys. And so when you guys do your January event, Bunkhouse Stampede, you don't just decide to run it all anywhere. We're going to run it in New York.
Yeah.
And when you run it in New York, well, what does Vince do? Well, he counter programs you. Now the pay-per-view companies won't play ball here because they've realized, wait a minute, we're the loser here. We're trying to sell as many pay-per-views as we can. We're not going to pick sides. We can't let you run a pay-per-view that same day, Vince. So Vince creates the Royal Rumble just to sabotage Bunkhouse Stampede, and he gives it away for free on USA.
Yeah.
Well, now, turnabout's fair play. Of course, everybody knows WrestleMania 4 is going to be a big happening. It's going to be at Trump Plaza, which is a big new building in Atlantic City, and they're going to make the Macho Man Randy Savage, and it's a big opportunity. But Dusty and Jim Crockett decide, nope, now it's our turn. We have a special event that's not a pay-per-view, and we're going to put it on TBS, the Superstation, where everyone gets it absolutely free, and we're going to run heads up at WrestleMania. This is really the first time Dusty and Crockett said, okay, enough's enough, right?
Yep. Yeah. I don't know if that was what the thought process was, because I wasn't, as involved in the political process of that time. But I knew that, we were going head up to him, and I was, like the way I am, way I approach it, I was excited to be part of it. Kind of like I told Ashley, I've been the main event, I think, on 10 Starrcades, right? But really, if you look at it compared to Ashley being the main event of two WrestleManias. But in my day, it was big, but you can't compare to what she's doing now.
Well,
not,
I don't,
not changing the narrative, but I mean, yeah, it was huge for us.
And this is going to be a big opportunity, just the idea of Clash of the Champions, because in that day, you know, Crockett more so than even Vince McMahon at the time, they were making their money on the live events. So you want to run as many as you can, get as many people in there, sell as many tickets. But that meant on TV, you usually had lots of promos and lots of enhancement matches, but you didn't have big time matches with big time finishes. You didn't offer main events on free TV, not like you do now where you can see it every Monday, Wednesday, or Friday.
Sure.
What do you think of the idea of we're going to counter program WrestleMania and we're going to have big time matches?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm just being as honest with you, Ken. I didn't look at it like that. I wasn't. I mean, I just knew that we were in a good place, and we still were. If we had, you know, as I've told you 100 times, if we had just stayed east of the Mississippi River, we'd probably still be in business. I mean, we were selling out everywhere, and that, you know, and I don't know if we sold out Greensboro on this event or not, but it was big. And, you know, the opportunity to wrestle Sting, who I thought was going to be huge if given the opportunity. I can't remember the rest of the card, but it was strong.
Oh, yeah. That first Clash of the Champions was indeed a strong card.
Yeah.
Of course, the main event is what we're going to be talking about today. But just to give you the undercard, it's Mike Rotundo defeating Jimmy Garvin in a college rules match.
Yeah.
Midnight Express defending their United States Tag Team Championships against the Fantastics. A really underrated tag team of Bobby and Tommy Rogers. We got the Road Warriors teaming up with Dusty Rhodes in a barbed wire match to take on the Powers of Pain and Ivan Koloff. And then Lex Luger and Barry Windham are going to pick up a win for the tag team championships over Arn and Tully.
Yeah.
That's a loaded card before we get to the world title.
Yeah, it's a lot. No, we were good. We and all the guys could really work back then. And I mean, like, as you know, I just always felt that not because the guys didn't have to or didn't have the ability, they didn't have to work as hard up there because they were more involved in the entertainment aspect of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I felt like there was a lot more political stuff going on up there and worried about who's going to do this and do that. And not that we didn't do that too, but not to the extent that was going on up there. It was rough treading, man. I thought Piper would tell me every day, I'm not putting anybody over. I said, well, good luck with that. And he didn't. So, but it was entertaining. And, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, you're living as good as you can live up prior to the Monday Night Wars.
I can't wait for us to fire this up. I want everybody to watch along with us. If you haven't already, pull up Peacock, man. Get out Clash of the Champions, Season 1, Episode 1. You want to go to 58 minutes and 55 seconds. That's Clash of the Champions, Season 1, Episode 1 on Peacock. Watch along with us as we watch this match with Sting at 58 minutes, 55 seconds. But before we do, I want to let everybody know about RicFlairShop.com, because, Rick, I can't believe the stuff you've got over there. You've got something for everybody. You got koozies, you got cutting boards, you got T-shirts, you got masks, you got leggings, you got hats. Everything is at RicFlairShop.com right now, is it not?
Yeah, if we're loaded up. I was supposed to be making more promos for it, but I haven't, so I'm glad we're doing this.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com. Are you feeling stuck making minimum payments on your credit card debt? SaveWithConrad.com can help, and you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this. NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Oh, and did I mention no house payments for 2 months? Get rid of your credit card debt and lower your monthly payments right now at SaveWithConrad.com. And without further ado, I say we watch the program, man, one more time. We're season one, episode one, Clash of the Champions. And we're at 58 minutes, 55 seconds. We're ready to roll. Here we go in 3, 2, 1, play.
WA World Tag Team Champions, Barry Windham and Lex Luger. What an electrified crowd that was here for that event.
And the electricity, it will not stop, ladies and gentlemen. The heavyweight championship.
That's when these two guys were at the best.
Yep.
At the best, the height of their career.
Right now, let's begin our festivities and our introductions. And go.
And they really work well together. They still do.
Ladies and gentlemen, this event, a one-fall match with a 45-minute time limit for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. For this event, there must be a winner. We do have judges outside the ring. Introducing to you right now our panel of judges, Gary Juster of the Member of Board of Directors of the National Wrestling Alliance. Former NWA professional wrestling star, Sandy Scott. The Pet of the Year, Patty Mullen. And someone you know and love from the hit television series, Ken Osmond, who portrays Eddie Haskell on the new Leave It to Beaver. Also, we'd like to welcome Jason Hervey, star of the Wonder Years.
Yes. All right, so we can take down the audio there. I just wanted everybody to hear the introduction of the celebrities. I'm fascinated by the idea that you guys had a penthouse pet there. Yeah. That doesn't exactly feel like family programming, but I'm sure you were not opposed.
I know, but I look back at that now and I think I don't know where, who. To this day, I'm not sure in how a couple of people were involved in judging a world championship wrestling match.
Yeah, Eddie Haskell.
Yeah.
In the Wonder Years.
We've gone from with Steamboat and I was Pat O'Connor, Buddy Rogers, Terry Funk, Luthes. And this one right here, I don't know. I'm not sure what that group of that group arrived there.
I assume some of that is because TBS said, hey,
exactly,
we want you to cross promote.
Yep.
So here we see Sting coming in. And by the way, this is the match where a lot of people agree you made Sting. I just want to give everyone the context of this. He didn't even show up on TBS until October of the prior year, October 17th, 1987. And I think you've only really worked Sting a couple of times in the run up to this. Why was Sting the right opponent, Rick?
I know. Dusty just came to me and said, what do you think? And I said, well, I love him. I mean, I think it was new, fresh. And he had that look that, you know, that very few guys have ever had. I mean, the paint, the charisma, very charismatic, really athletic. There's the robe that Darius has.
Yep.
No, it was just one of those things that worked out. And, you know, I don't think I ever met a nicer guy. Some guys are just really too nice for this business, and he and Ricky Steamboat were two of them. I mean, just really nice guys. I mean, Sting to this day, you know, just remains one of the most humble, nice people I've ever met. So
we see J.J. Dillon going up in what I've known as the shark cage. Let's track the audio here. Let's hear these introductions.
You know, we left them in Sarasota there one night for an hour after the building closed.
One stipulation of this event, James J. Dillon will be suspended high above the ring.
His greatness is really underestimated.
Introducing now the challenger from Venice Beach, California, weighing at 260 pounds. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sting. And now, the world's heavyweight champion, five times over. Ladies and gentlemen, weighing in at 242 pounds, the world's heavyweight champion from Charlotte, North Carolina, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
We can end the track there, but man, how underrated was Truckin' Tom Miller? He did a great job, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did. Yes, he did. Tom was great.
And there was probably, if you had your pick, there's nobody you'd rather be in there with than Tommy Young, right?
Oh, absolutely. To this day. I mean, Tommy should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. I hate that people like that get, you know, over or get left out because as time goes by. But people, he was fantastic. Yeah.
The show here has 6,000 fans in attendance. And as a reminder, guys, this is head to head with WrestleMania. So sure, you could pay and come out of your pocket and have a pay-per-view for WrestleMania, or you could just have it absolutely free right here on TBS, a world title match. And Sting at this point was gaining a lot of momentum. I mean, he certainly has the look that the WWF was trying to go for.
Did he ever, huh?
With the face paint and the entertainment and the fun haircut and the rat tail and the neon colors. And
yeah. Yeah. I just can't say enough about him. He was great.
We see Gary Juster on the end right there.
And I talk to Gary periodically now.
I talked to him not too long ago. He's got a big surgery coming up. So we're pulling for him.
Oh, he does? I didn't know.
I think he's getting a new hip put in.
Oh, I did not know that.
So we're pulling for him and hopefully he makes a speedy recovery. I've known a few folks.
I can't tell you how many hotels he's bailed me out of in the morning when my credit card didn't work. Big night at the bar, kids.
I'll tell you, man, that damn daily limit, it gets you when you're buying those $4,000 dinners.
The daily limit, is that what it is?
Well, no, seriously.
Is that what happened in Dallas when you bailed me out? Was the daily limit?
I'm sure of it. The daily limit.
Sam's?
What you got to do, Rick, is you got to go down to your local banker and you got to say, hey, man.
Oh, I got one now.
$2,000 shit ain't cutting it. I need a $10,000 daily limit. And then, you know, spend to your heart's content, I suppose.
I got a new bank in Tampa, man. I'm rolling now.
By the way, what we're watching right now, Rick, and I know you didn't keep up with this back then. This is the 1988 match of the year, according to the readers of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. So think about that. Of every match that the readers saw, whether it was here in America or in Mexico or in Japan, but certainly the NWA, certainly the WWF, this is the match that people said was the very best match of the year. And I'm excited we get to watch it together here.
Oh, I always like back. Anything to do with Sting. I think I have watched this back before, but certainly I've watched highlights of it.
How did you decide what you were going to wear? Like, how did you land on purple trunks and purple knee pads here?
I really don't know because I never asked my opponent what they were wearing. I just, you know, picked out something I thought was nice. You know, if I had a good tan, I probably wore lighter colors. It all depended on where I had been. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sure. I obviously was home in Charlotte before this, but I can guarantee I didn't go home that night.
Yeah, it's time to have a little fun, I would guess. When you're structuring a match like this, and of course we know that, boy, wrestling has changed quite a bit. Oh man, look at there, the chop, and he just starts walking you down. Is that something you guys would have worked out beforehand?
No, I'd call it there. He that's one thing I like about Steve. He could say it, and he got it.
Yeah.
Not what'd you say? I mean, he was very attentive. I said this when I inducted him in the Hall of Fame, you know, to go out there and wrestle 50 minutes is not easy. If you haven't ever done it before. And he had never done, I don't bet he had as long as match up to now, it'd probably been 15 minutes. So it's amazing. And I didn't want to press him. Because a lot of the stuff that we did was where he had to be at himself to press slam me and stuff like that. But he never got tired. He never drew a deep breath. And I don't think he ever got really nervous either.
You guys were clearly working on this match on the build up here. You would work together in Baltimore on the 10th. Mm-hmm. On the 12th, you would work together in the 13th in Columbus, Ohio. You did the same match at the Omni on the 13th as well. Mm. You took it all over. I mean, whether you're talking Reno, Nevada, a couple of weeks prior, you were there with this one, the Great Western Forum, which obviously is where the Lakers play. That would have been a big time opportunity.
Yeah.
Cincinnati Gardens. So even the USC Pavilion in Chicago and St. Louis, Missouri, and the night before even. So in Richmond, Virginia, you're still doing this same match in front of 2,000 fans there. By that point, you've really got all the bugs and kinks.
Yes.
You've got a system worked out now, right?
Yeah, I was really comfortable with him as he was with me.
Shoot you in the ropes there. Big shoulder tackle, drop down, leapfrog. Look there, man. You guys are on fire here. Oh, and the big press slam. You loved having Sting press slam me.
Yeah. Well, he was good, boy. See, he lost it for a second. It's so strong, he recovered.
Man, you don't see him do a lot of head scissor takeovers, but there they are, and a big hip toss. Man, this is just nonstop action so far, and that's the reason Meltzer loved it. He would say Ric Flair and Sting went to a 45-minute draw in the NWA title match. Mm-hmm. This was certainly a match of the year candidate. The match started out slow paced, but the heat never died, and it was never dull. Flair did a great job of selling, like, bear hugs and headlocks early on. Actually, there's no wrestler in the business who could have put on the performance Flair did in this match. He was so good, I almost thought Sting was going to stand there in awe of him. Sting held up his end, although Flair was certainly doing the carrying. I also want to make mention of Jim Ross, who did a tremendous job with Tony Schiavone on the commentary the whole show, but especially in the first 25 minutes when things were so spaced. He sold the match and sold the intensity and the importance of the match. We had the impression we were watching a classic before it actually turned into a legit classic. The commentary piece, Rick, I don't think gets enough attention.
No,
I've heard some people say that you guys are making the music, but they provide the lyrics to the song. And I think JR was at his best in this era. Just my opinion.
Oh yeah. As I said earlier, those guys were really, their chemistry was great. And Jim has always been, you know, when he's on, man, he's, you know, as you know, the announcers can make you or break you, even today at AEW or WWE. And that's one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of who's the kid we were talking about earlier that just came on. It does the color on SmackDown.
Oh, yeah, Pat McAfee.
Pat McAfee is fabulous. He brings so much energy to it.
Yes. This is nonstop action. And you compare this to what the WWF was presenting that day. And Meltzer would say this: Jim Crockett kicked Vince McMahon's ass Sunday afternoon. And on the single least likely day of the year for that to happen. Of course, we won't have anything resembling economic figures. And McMahon did make more money, of course, which some would say is the bottom line. I can't believe anyone who would watch both shows could do anything but laugh at the comparison. There really was no comparison. You know, the WWE or the WWF at the time was certainly more entertainment. This was more physicality. I mean, let's not forget, earlier on this same show on TBS, there was a barbed wire match.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, these days when there's more quote unquote smart fans and people want to know what star ratings are and all that, well, there's nothing that's going to compare to you and Sting on that day on either show.
Well, you hope not. But I have to look back at JJ. They're never nonstop energy. You know, you can just sit in that cage and do nothing because you never know when the camera's going to be on you.
Right.
But every time they hit JJ, he's in motion. I don't think there's no way they could have buzzed him to tell him to keep moving around. So my kudos to him.
I'm not saying that you've ever said that you made Sting, but a lot of people point to this match and say, boy, he made Sting that day. Do you remember Sting being nervous about this opportunity?
Oh, I think he was, but not to the point where it affected him in the ring. That's the one thing. When you're really nervous, you know, I've had guys throw up before they wrestled me, and I just thought to myself, I just knew him, and like you said, we had some matches earlier. He just knew what he was doing, and they, you know, even all that, like that Steamboat, that spot right there, I used to do a Steamboat all the time, and Steve didn't really know where to drop right there, so it looked kind of awkward. But he, if he told you something, he could do anything.
I'm curious.
If I told him something, he could do anything.
Tommy Young here is at this point probably the best referee in the business. What made Tommy so special?
He loved being in part of it. He wanted to be as big a part of the match as he possibly could be. And he never took any time off. Does that make sense? He moved around. He dove in for the fun twos. He actually made it, you know, he made it look really like it was, see him right here? He's not getting too much, but he just make.
Oh, look at there. Switching it around. He goes from a chop to here come the big punches in the corner. You don't see this very much anymore. He's just threatening right now. How about that? And he eases up, acquiesces. Man, just nonstop motion. The flare flop, buddy. Golly, that's good stuff.
Woo choose.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
You see what I mean?
Just nonstop action up there, man. What do you guys call that? Did you have a nickname for the shark cage?
No, I told you that we're in Sarasota one night. I was wrestling Dusty. When they closed the building, left JJ in a cage for an hour after the building was closed. Up in the air.
I'm sure he was not too tickled with that.
I was back at the bar and getting out of the cage.
Tommy Young on the outside, making sure he got a good shot. I don't know that I've ever seen that before.
No, Tommy was just, he had that natural instinct to just be where to be. You know what I mean? Look at that chick. What do you think she's thinking about me right now? She can't be looking at Sting, can she?
I mean, maybe.
God, he was handsome, wasn't he?
He was. Still is.
Yeah, still is. He is.
The match got 4.75 stars from Meltzer. You guys went to a draw. Of course, that was really your MO as the touring NWA champion, especially in the years prior when you're hitting all the different territories. You're the bad guy, the flashy, flamboyant, you know, millionaire, big shot bad guy. And you come to town, challenge their, allow their big baby face to challenge you. And he gets oh so close, but doesn't ever quite get it done. And there's lots of time limit draws. This is another example of that. Is that Jackie Crockett we see moving around the outside there?
Yeah. It sure is. You know, it's funny. I'll tell you a funny story about the end of this match. I was out of my mind because they gave me the wrong time cues.
Really?
Yeah, I sat in a scorpion way too long because they gave me the wrong time cues. I was screaming at Jackie afterwards.
So Jackie would have been the one communicating with you?
Yeah. Well, Jackie was giving the time to Tommy.
So Jackie probably has a headset on, I would guess. So
yeah.
He's hearing from the truck and he's communicating to Tommy.
Yeah.
I got you. You know, Jackie's like one of the unsung heroes of the Crockett outfit. We hear people talk about Jim all the time. We saw David all the time, but man, one of the guys who's there a lot of times right there in the middle of all this with you is Jackie, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jackie hung us every day. But it just, you know, here's what happens. You talked about Tom Miller and some of the other guys, right?
Yeah.
The old school guys, and even as good as they were, if you don't understand what's going on in these events, you know, we're not doing stuff like this before. All of a sudden, the guys that have never done this stuff are doing, you know, live matches on TV, you know, where we have to be precisely on time. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And they didn't know how to do it. So you can't really fault them. You just wonder how in the hell do you get better at it? Because, you know, Vince's guys never, to this day, they don't miss a cue. And they do, they're in a world of shit. Time cues are everything, especially on live TV, which this was.
To be clear, Sting right here had just had his 29th birthday. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't been in the business a whole hell of a long time. But of course, I think everybody knows famously, he started at the exact same time as the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
And the Ultimate Warrior is going to be a big part of the WrestleMania show. And of course, 2 years from here, you know, Sting's going to become the world champion, as does the Ultimate Warrior on the other channel. And it's been fun for me to think about if you could fantasy book, what if things turned out differently. And somehow Jim Hellwig wound up with Jim Crockett Promotions and Steve Borden wound up with the World Wrestling Federation. I think Sting could have somehow been an even bigger star with that WWF merchandising.
Absolutely. And Jim Hellwig would have been on the first match.
Isn't that crazy to think about?
If he got booked, period. Sorry to say that, but you didn't say anything about someone that's not here, but there's no comparison in their ability in the ring.
How many matches did you have with Warrior over the years? Just a handful,
just,
right?
Just two in my life.
What was that like?
They were horrible. The first one, I came out of the ring in Winnipeg, Canada, and Pat Patterson was standing there and said, "That's the worst world championship match I've ever seen in my life." And I said, "Pat, you don't have to tell me. I was in it." The second time with Charles Barkley in the front row in Phoenix, he dropped me on my head, and that's when I got the inner ear problem.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. Then the next day I flew in and dropped the belt to Brett, remember?
I knew you had some sort of vertigo thing. And
oh, that was bad. Yeah. That's why I felt so bad about the match with Brett when we changed the title to him. And then I went home because I couldn't get up and down with the equilibrium.
Right.
It makes sense. I could get up, but I didn't have my balance.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, remember after Edge suplexed me in a ladder match?
Yep.
It happened to me again.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Where he gave me a suplex. And the thing went out for a minute, and he went up to drop kick me. Remember, I walked the wrong way because I couldn't walk straight. Wow. The other time it happened when Jeff Jarrett hit me with a guitar. But otherwise, I've been lucky. It's been normal. But
there's another thing for me to give Jeff shit about. You know, he's on his podcast every week telling everybody he's a horseman, and I'm not buying it.
Yeah, tell me, he gave me the vertigo gimmick. In Detroit.
So if this wasn't Sting, you know, let's say for whatever.
Look at the energy he has here.
Firing up, man. Getting the crowd into it.
Yep.
And physically, this
is so damn athletic, too. See, you know, here's the deal. When you're working with a guy like this and you want to make him strong, he's got to work strong all the way through. So when he missed that elbow, there's no way that he can sell it after what we've been through. Does that make sense?
Yes.
He missed it and got right back up. Now, if he lays there like he got killed after missing an elbow, anything else we do psychology-wise doesn't mean anything. We've already painted a picture that he's like, you know, almost incredibly difficult to get down.
What's the rule of thumb to match structure, Rick? There's a lot of folks who are listening to this who've never obviously been in a wrestling match, but you know, is there a formula that you like to abide by?
Well, my formula is to get the guy over, depending on the length of time you have in the match, is to get the guy you're working with over so strong that when you finally cut him off, the people will feel sorry for him. But you have to cut him off with a cheap shot. It can't be something where you're just overpowering him. Those kind of things, I've never thought that was cool. That makes sense. If I'm gonna take Undertaker down, I got to do it really, you know, with a low blow or somebody interferes.
Crafty.
How else do I get him down? Does that make sense?
Yep.
They used to tell Mark, I used to tell Andre, anybody like Big Show, if you guys would just fall to your knees. So we're almost the same height. We can really have a match. Just sell from your knees where I can do logical stuff. You know what I mean? Jump on them and all that. Because otherwise it's so much bigger. It doesn't make sense. Look at Eddie. Eddie thinks he's going home with the penthouse girl. I don't think so.
Boy, this is a different era. You can just see, you know, when you look out in the crowd, obviously this is pre-cell phones. You know, this is pre- you know, camera phones and really signs. There's not a ton of signs here, but everybody's paying attention. Everybody knows how significant this is, especially in Greensboro.
Yeah. Well, you notice that he, when he sells for me too, he really sells.
Yeah, he does. JJ's earning his money tonight, man.
Yeah. But you notice, I tell you that the fact that he's always on,
Do doing a great job selling the back right now after you've thrown him into the guardrail, now into the buckles.
Yeah, he really knew how to sell for a guy that big. I mean, you know, Sting is just plain as handsome and pretty as anybody could be right here. You know what I mean? But this is where you learn. This is where he's Ricky Steamboat and Ricky Morton and selling that to it.
Did you have a favorite set of spots that you like to do with Sting? We saw the press slam a lot, but
drop down, leapfrog.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. I would just call it first spot of the match. I say, let me have a warm up bump, then we'll go.
This knee drop here, this is a Harley Race special, is it not?
Yeah. I just changed it around. Harley always just did it standing over you.
Yeah.
So I just backed up, but that's clearly I learned it from Harley.
What's the magic of having the best knee drop possible?
Not to hurt the guy. Well, you can tear his forehead off if you're not careful.
Is that just trial and error? Just tons of practice to get that done? I mean, you've told us before.
Well, the back of me, I wore a knee pad, so wasn't going to happen that often. But like, you know, some guys like Dusty and that would cut themselves when I did it. I'd pull the knee pad up, right, and hit them with my shin bone.
Yeah.
Which in reality would open anybody up, right? So everybody had a different way of doing it. But just them trusting me. But see, one thing about Sting, too, Sting let me hit him. And I mean, I really would punch and knock the shit out of him, chopping him. My Steamboat, he stayed open, always stayed open.
The judges at ringside, as we said, probably a TBS call, but boy, it does a great job because you had a 5.8 rating, a 12.6 share. That means it was viewed in over 2.5 million homes. And of course, these days we don't talk about the number of homes. We talk about the number of people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you assume that there's just two people per household, that's 5 million folks that are watching this. But realistically, it's even more than that. I mean, this is a big,
it got a 7.7 rating, right?
I think it got a 5.8. I don't know. Steve just undid my notes, so I'm not sure.
Oh, I thought it was a 7.7 for a while.
I don't know. I had it and I don't know.
Yeah, it's fun to look back on it. Man, those damn obliques have haunted me my whole life.
5.8, 12.6 share.
Okay.
This is obviously going to be the match that that helped make Sting. On the other channel, we've got Randy Savage becoming the man. Were you friendly with Randy? Had you ever even worked with Randy at this point? Did you know him in 88?
Oh, I helped break Randy in.
Really?
Randy came to Charlotte in 75, right after I got there. He had just come from playing minor league baseball with the Cardinals, and he and Randy lived together. I kind of helped break Randy in. Man, we got along real well.
Man, look at Sting.
I didn't see him again for a long time until we got to New York, but yeah, you know, I always liked Randy.
Man, look at you begging off. This is great stuff. And then of course you outsmart him, down goes Sting. Some of your best stuff here, man. This is really, really good stuff. And then we see Sting by Sandy Scott. That's a name that some wrestling fans, you know, younger fans may not be familiar with. Tell us about Sandy Scott.
Sandy and George. Yep. George is the one that got me where I'm at.
Can you explain what they meant to your career and what their roles were in the business?
Well, Sandy was just, you know, just a good friend. George was the booker that gave me the idea to call Olivia Walker and to start doing the Rogers stuff, which I'll quote Harley, Flair took Rogers stuff to a whole new level. But he's the one that gave me the idea. And then Olivia made my first robe, and then we were off and running.
What was Sandy doing behind the scenes for the company?
He ran towns. He ran about five of the towns. Roanoke, he lived up in the Roanoke area. But he was always at Greensboro. So these are the kind of things that a guy like Steve's 255 there, to be able, even though I'm helping him a little bit, to be able to nip up like that.
Big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal, yeah. And then and here he is. We got to be 30 minutes into the match, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're almost 30 minutes right in from our playback here. A big hip toss out of the corner. But that's the third time he set that big punch up in the corner. Oh, and there we go for a near fall.
That's the only thing that we didn't do very well is we didn't have a lot of false finishes because we just weren't that familiar with each other. And having gone that long, I don't think the longest we'd ever gone before was probably about 25 minutes.
Yeah. I should mention that, you guys were really working this pretty regular. You even continued it the very next day, Greenville, South Carolina at the Memorial Auditorium, no DQ match with you and Sting.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were going to be married, not just for this short run, but really for the rest of your careers. When did you know you were going to be married to Sting for the long haul?
Probably after this match.
Yeah.
Because it was so well received. And I just think he just, he got better every day.
On the other side of this match, like when you're all done, you're coming back through the curtain. Did you feel like you guys had done something special? Were you feeling it or were you not?
I did, but I can remember like yesterday, I was so mad. As you'll see at the end of the match, I was in a scorpion way too long.
Yeah.
And that when once I, there's no way to get to the rope and have them put it on me again, it will look like shit. But if I had to do over again, the two things, if I had to do over again, I would have really gone over that with the referee and the time of that. And number two, when he beat me in Baltimore, I regret that looking back. I know I should have had him beat me with the scorpion.
Let's do some questions. By the way, if you want to ask a question here on the program, you can do it over on Twitter at To Be The Man Pod. It's at To Be The Man Pod on Twitter. Adam wants to know, what were the feelings backstage concerning the first clash going up against WrestleMania? Was there any additional pressure to put on a great match knowing that fact?
No, I think we just look at it as a challenge. And one thing as you've done through this podcast, Connor, you pointed out we worked every day.
Yeah.
It's like you said, we didn't go home after this. I got drunk and went to work the next day in Greenville. We did the same thing. I don't know what Steve did back then. I think he might have had a drink or two back then, but the show was on the road, man. We didn't have days off. That was unheard of.
Drew Landry wants to know, you said in other media, Sting was your toughest opponent. Was this the match you knew Sting was your toughest opponent, or was there another?
See, look at the athletic ability there.
That crossbody all the way across the ring was unbelievable. Yeah.
I don't think he was my toughest opponent, but he was one of the most fun to be with. By toughest, I mean, when I tell people, I feel like you're talking about Harley Race.
Right.
The two different words, but Steve is certainly one of the most talented. And see, if a guy isn't with you, if he wasn't with me trying to lift him up for that move to get him that high over my body,
that's impossible.
It would actually look like I hurt his knee.
Yeah.
That's athleticism on his part.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, well, they don't feel comfortable. They don't know where they're going. Cause I've suplexed guys, got them like that and dropped them on their back, but they don't trust you. But he trusted me through everything.
Michael McClanahan asked a great question here, Rick. He wants to know, people oftentimes credit this match Ric Flair as being one of the ones to put Sting on the map. Who does Rick remember working with that elevated his career the same way Rick elevated Sting?
Wahoo McDaniels.
Really?
Yes. But it was never on national TV.
Right.
Wahoo taught me a lot. It was a survival man with Wahoo. He was so damn tough. But I learned how to be, I learned how to be hanging there. And these guys like Wahoo were so competitive. It's hard to explain. I mean, I've wrestled so many great guys. You know what I mean right here? He's right there for it. And that people can believe that because if in real life, it would hurt if you drop someone like that.
Of course.
We're trying to answer your question. What did you ask me prior to that about? Yeah, tough guys. I mean, Jack Mulligan was a real tough guy. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
I called guys like Steamboat and Sting a night off. So easy. I would look at Sting and the referee was giving instructions. And I would say, "You're in the ring tonight with the greatest athlete in the world today." He'd start laughing. That was it. That's all we did was have fun. He just listened to everything. It was perfect.
Josh wants to know, I've heard on other podcasts that back in the territory days, the champions had to be quote unquote shoot badasses because guys would come and try to make a name for themselves by beating the champion. My question is, many wrestling fans have you and Shawn Michaels as 1A and 1B, with the main difference being you are the best traveling champion. Do you have any stories that you can share where a guy tried to take liberties and maybe legit beat you for the belt and make a name for himself in a smaller territory? Just wondering, because we don't hear a lot of shoot stories when you were trying to defend the
title. I only went through that once with Jumbo Tsuruta in Japan.
Really?
Yeah, they wanted to beat me. That's why they sent Harley with me. Harley had to manage me. See how athletic he is to go up that high? He wasn't worried about me dropping him on his head or anything.
Yeah, at 35 minutes into the match, too.
Yeah, once you've gone that long and then you trust somebody, because, once you've been dropping your head going backwards, you'll never forget it. I guarantee you. One time land on your head backwards, and you'll remember it your whole career. If you hurt yourself.
You know, when you were setting this figure four up and you drug him over and then you did it a second time, I thought, man, you're going to be so close. You're going to hit your head on the ropes, and you didn't. Duh. It's because you're going to set it up to get this extra leverage here. You damn dirty cheater. You.
Yeah, I know it. I was horrible. This is where Tom Young was so good.
Yes.
I'd be talking to Tom Young right now. See, he's listening to me.
Right.
See, here's the other thing I would tell these guys. This is real, real important. This is the kind of stuff that makes wrestling good guys or good wrestlers are bad. If I'm going to hold the rope, if I don't hold the rope and he doesn't sell like I'm holding the rope, it doesn't make any difference.
Right.
Okay, he can sell regular right there, but when I grab the rope, watch him. Watch what he does. He really goes crazy. You know what I mean?
Yes.
This is where you need a good referee. Because if I'm grabbing a rope and he stays in the same position, it doesn't mean shit. This is where Steve really learned at a young age how to sell this stuff. You know, if you're going to put your foot on the ropes, try to hold a guy's shoulder down, you know what I mean? That's where the referee, the timing comes in, so important.
See, it's going to be a great referee.
This is the first time I told him this. It dragged me back in the middle of the ring. See, now I'm panicking because I can't get to it.
This is great stuff, man. Oh, and now he's going to reverse it. Everybody knows what's coming. And now he's got it. Classic stuff, man. Chase Lamar says, it's been speculated often, and you may have answered this before, but what do you think would have happened if Sting and Warrior had reversed? We kind of talked about that earlier, but the big question is, do you think Sting would have had similar or more success with the WWF?
Sting would have been put in a political position where I don't know that he would have survived. But did he have talent? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I told him a bunch of times when all this stuff started happening at WCW, I said, let me call Vince McMahon. But he stayed true to it, and they paid him a lot of money, and, you know, it worked out for him ultimately. But he... towards the end, when all the crap was going on, he deserved to be up there, and he would have been huge up there. But like everywhere else, there's politics too. You know, the new guy coming in. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I'm just saying, from the merchandise standpoint, as handsome as he was, that gear, paint, and everything, and the kids just loved him. Everybody loved him.
We,
yeah, I'm telling Tom Young to get out here a second. Tommy's right there. How good is that?
He's tremendous, dude. Big standing suplex, staple back then. Why don't you think people do the standing suplex more often now?
I don't know, because they've forgotten how good it looked. Because nobody sells anything.
Oh, double knees up for the splash. Dirty Dog wants to know, what are Rick's thoughts on doing the Clash of the Champions specials? Did he think they'd help Jim Crockett Promotions? Of course, at this point, you're playing catch-up ball. But, you know, the Ole Anderson school of thought, the old school way of thinking was, man, you can't give away these big-time shows. It'll kill your houses. So you shouldn't put this thing on TV. But others would say, no, this is what it takes to grow. What did you think back then, Rick, in 1988?
Well, I didn't understand the financial ramifications as much as I probably should have. So I actually thought that it was better to do these big shows live. Because you have to remember our viewing audience, we didn't have the, which killed us. We didn't have the saturation on the West Coast with TBS that the network TVs had for them. So now, of course, TBS is everywhere. But back then, you know, anything west of the Mississippi, that they didn't have nearly the saturation. So that's why first time we went to LA and all that, we sold out. But every house after that went down. It's not because we didn't give them great shows. We just, you know, we just didn't have the, we didn't have the audience.
Andy P wants to know, what was it about Sting that made him the guy that you wanted to eventually drop the title to instead of Lex Luger?
Because I promised Sting in Corpus Christi. I said, I'll wait for you to get back. It was never about Lex. I promised Sting. And Jim Herd was such an asshole that, you know, I just said, hey, you know, that you just want to do it. There's a lot of reasons. It was nothing against Lex Luger at all. It was that was strictly a contract thing. So people are going to have a different version, a different story. I know the story. So when I was with it, and apparently I was right because they fired Herd and I was gone.
You know, this is really a game changer for Sting. As we said, you've been working with him on the loops, but as far as the television audience, the last sort of big time show we saw him at was Starrcade. And he was in the opening 6-man tag with the Freebirds against Eddie Gilbert, Larry Zbyszko, and Rick Steiner. It went to a time limit draw, and you know, he's on the card and that's special. That's important. That's cool. But here he is for the world championship in a live TBS special going to a 45-minute draw. No denying that he's a star on the other side of this. What do you remember his reaction being after the match? Was he as thrilled with it as you were?
Oh, he was really happy. I mean, I liked the match. I just hated the ending.
Right.
Because of the timing situation. I don't think he was aware of that. And then he wouldn't have been in the business long enough to know what I was talking about. But I just felt like I didn't, because it kept working. But that you can kill a damn hold like that for a baby face when you're sitting in this hold that long. I mean, I should have, if I had thought about it and I was quick enough, then I would have had him carry back on a stretcher. Like I didn't give up. You know what I mean? Does it make sense?
Yeah, man. Look at Sting. Now, just if you're not watching, and by the way, you should be, find us on YouTube. Just look up Ric Flair on YouTube and ta-da, there it'll be. But
God, she's in awe of me.
Well, maybe Sting. Hypothetically, he's got you in the figure four. That's one of the staples that you used to have back then is, you know, you could put the figure four on them, but they could reverse it. And then they could put the figure four on you as a submission hold. It's pretty cool in that regard that, you know, you would let it go both ways. And we didn't see that a lot with other submission moves, but we did with the figure four. And I think maybe that's why it works so well.
Yeah, well, because I couldn't beat anybody with it anyway.
Should have tried arching your back.
I probably called this too many times.
The punch in the corner and the hip toss out?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen that one a few times here.
Yeah, I probably called that too many times. You know, the problem was I couldn't get blood in this one, so I was at a loss.
Oh, that was a regular part of the repertoire for sure.
Me, yep. Couldn't work without a blade. I could sell, but it wasn't the same without the red hair.
You know, when this show is over, and you guys have clearly
based on things like that, that I taught Sting, he remembered. You're going to put a guy's foot in a rope. You got to hold it in place.
Yes.
The referee, my classic. Now I know we're getting ready to go home.
Oh, it's been a while. We needed to see that.
Yeah. Up
down on the turnbuckle. And that's something you borrowed from somebody else's book as well, right?
A young man named Ray Stevens. Yep.
Was he your favorite wrestler as a kid?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you would think right now with your head down, maybe you're going to come up with a little.
Yeah, I know. It looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think I went to do it. Remembered I couldn't do it. I should have dove on top, walked over and fell on top of the penthouse girl. Done the flop right on top of her in a white dress.
It's interesting to see how just the evolution of the set design is different, you know, different. The rows are way back away from that guardrail too, but no mats around the floor either.
No, I know.
I was getting to though, you think Crockett and Dusty were happy at the end of this program?
Oh yeah. They were ecstatic. I know TBS was too.
Man, isn't it crazy that, you know, that really became Hulk's version or Sting's version of Hulking up. Just
yeah,
that Hulk beating the chest thing that really worked.
Yeah, that was great.
Raking your head across the top rope. You don't see that anymore either.
No, because guys don't sell it.
The beg off routine, man. Such a classic piece of what you were doing back then. What do you think Sting weighs here, if you had to guess?
255. You got just an unreal physique, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the best shape I think he was ever in. Nothing for that atomic drop. Down goes the clothesline. Great stuff, man. Foot on the rope. Looks like these the toes of these boots are wearing out. That's usually where your boots wear out first, though, right?
Yeah, from the flip.
Yeah.
The metal.
How many pairs of boots do you think you bought over the years?
600.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, remember, I used to buy 3 a month.
Wow.
And then, of course, we all know we're there.
Scattered around everywhere.
Well, yeah, but there's a pile of them in Charlotte.
You think she still has a bunch of them?
Well, God, I mean, you know, all my trunks and knee pads, I saved all my stuff. It was all gone.
Those damned ex-wives.
Yeah. I had that back. Just think about it. 5 robes with Tiffany. Jeez.
Yeah, that pink one on the top of RicFlairShop.com, I think got sold on the side of a highway.
Yeah.
Like 12 years ago. So clearly in a match like this, I mean, you're the, not only the quote unquote heel, but the veteran. So you're going to be calling this, but this is really before there's quote unquote agents in wrestling, right? It's just between you and Sting putting this together.
Yeah. But I don't think we even talked much before the match because dressings were separate there. And yet he would have had to be seen by the crowd. See, this is where he's strong. He comes right back in. And this is the kind of stuff that, see how athletic he is.
Yep. Same spot that he just did, but now it's your turn. He's trying to see if he can finish the sunset flip, but you fall down, grab the ropes. Tommy Young's having nothing to do with it. Yeah, that was a false finish. A lot of people stood up right there and thought for sure when Sting reversed it, that was it. In hindsight, would it have been a good idea since they were anointing Randy Savage on the other channel? Could it have worked if you'd have let Sting beat you here for the world title?
Absolutely.
Man, what a great performance. I see why this one match of the year. You don't see very many 45 minute matches in wrestling anymore. Do you think our just attention span as a society in this Twitter society, in this instantaneous world we're in, we don't have the attention span for a 45 minute match anymore? Do you think that's not the case?
I think it depends on who they are and how many guys can do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'll tell you what you can't do anyway, and there's not one in this whole match. People are not going to buy rest holds in live TV with other stuff going on. You cannot sit in a headlock. You cannot sit in an armbar. You know what I mean? You've got to keep moving. So this right here is where we're going home. And this got screwed up. See?
Yeah, let's track a little bit of this audio here, Steve.
The eyes are screaming. Yeah, I'm clearly in there 20 seconds too long. Doesn't look that bad there. I remember I threw this Dave Jackie Slack, God damn it. I'm the best wrestler in the world today, man. Get your clock right. I don't know. What do you think? Do I stay in it too long?
Yeah, I mean, I could see how you would want to be in there a little less time.
Yeah. The penthouse pet is making up my mind right now, me or Sting.
Feel the audio here, too. Yeah, I think in theory, what you were saying about being in there too long would be maybe he puts it on at 10 and then you hang on for like the last 8 or 9 seconds, not 20.
Well, that's why I just kept laying there. I had to sell it. Jeez.
I had the great pleasure of having dinner not too long ago with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He was here in Huntsville for Comic-Con, and we got to get together and enjoy a dinner down at Roost Chris, which you and I have frequented many times here in town. And he's telling me this great story about you and him, where you were supposed to not do an hour. You were supposed to do 20 minutes, according to Mr. Scott. And you guys decided to go long instead. And you had worked out the finish. And he kept saying now, and you go, not yet, not yet, not yet, several times. And then finally, with just a couple of seconds left, you say, okay, now. And literally right as time is expiring, that's when the finish happened and the crowd just went bananas. But he was really complimenting your ability to know where that clock was and that you were just seconds away from it being a time limit draw. But instead, you stole the victory. And of course, you cheated because that's what you damn dirty cheaters did. But that last minute, right as time expires, that was like a staple of yours, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's just all you could do was just, you know, it's like actually, to me, he clearly won the match. I don't know how I got the vote, but. And he look how good he is here. To see that experience, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's incredulous, the idea that he hasn't won. But, of course, Patty Mullen, she's clapping because she's maybe thinking about Space Mountain. I don't know. Well, there it is. You're leaving with the big gold belt. I love just these old school graphics, the way it looks and feels. And, man, this was fun. And we see three of the best that ever did it, sort of recapping the night for us. Tony Schiavone on the left, Jim Ross in the middle, Bob Caudle on the right. That's about as good as it gets right there, is it not, Rick?
Down memory lane, for sure. You know, Bob was there all those years at WKPLR in Raleigh. And then, of course, Jim, I met in Oklahoma years before that. And Tony, which I have to remind him periodically, was calling balls and strikes at the single-A ballpark for the Charlotte O's. So, once again, Schiavone, you owe me.
Well, I don't think there's any debate about that. And I don't think there's any debate that we all need life insurance. Of course, I'm talking about GoliathLife.com. You know, Rick, these days we all have auto insurance, but we might not get in a wreck. We all have health insurance, but we might not need it. But we're all going to need life insurance. And it's not about you. It's about your family. It's about peace of mind. It's about taking care of them. What's great about GoliathLife.com, Rick, is they give you 20 quotes from 20 different carriers. You pick the terms, you pick the payments. It's insurance in your hands on your time. They make it so easy, Rick. You don't have to do a phone call. And if they have to do a medical exam, they'll send somebody to your house or office. You don't have to do anything, but you pick the payment. But if you don't have life insurance, you haven't done enough planning for your family. Get a quote right
now. That's the guy's honest truth. That's the one thing I've always done right in life. I've already carried a lot of life insurance.
GoliathLife.com can make it happen for you guys. So check it out and be sure to check out next week, Rick, because this was fun, but man, I want to see one of your other favorite opponents of all time. I want to talk about Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. We just showed
you
defending the title against Sting. Next week, we're going to see you drop the title and help make Ricky the Dragon Steamboat world champion for the very first time in Chicago. That's going to be a lot of fun, is it not?
Oh, man. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed this, Conrad.
I hope you guys have had fun. If you have a question about that match in Chicago, or maybe you want to talk about whatever else is going on in Rick's life, the way to interact with the show is to jump on Twitter at To Be The Man Pod. And of course, if you'd like to advertise here on the program, well, we'd love to have your business. It's
advertiseconrad.com.
And we'll see you next week. In the meantime, pick up that swag, baby, at RickFlairShop.com. Anything else we need to plug? What are you doing this weekend, Nate? Anything fun?
Guess what? I'm hanging out with Conrad Thompson and my beautiful daughter, Megan, in Tampa.
I got to get on that boat, dude. How many horsepower?
We will be on the Woo. We will be at Hula Bay. We'll be at the Battery. We'll be at the Marriott. We're going to ride it hard and pull everybody up wet, man. Let's go.
I can't weekend.
The Nation Conrad back together again.
Look at Woo! Lock up your Miller Lights. Here we come. We'll see you next week right here on To Be The Man.
Woo!
If you could change one thing about your home, what would it be? A new kitchen, a new master bath, maybe put in a pool. What if you could do it with no money out of pocket and cheaper monthly payments? SaveWithConrad.com can help, and you can even skip your next two house payments. NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. SaveWithConrad.com.